Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, patriots. Welcome to the weekly podcast. This is Radio Free Redoubt, episode 23-36, the 36th episode of 2023. And wow, we're already past the halfway mark in November. It's flying by. Good evening. This evening, there are a couple things I'm going to hit on. First of all, in the American Redoubt, with the human rights Gestapo coming after the, well, targeting one of the most conservative areas in the country, this is deliberate. Well, Casey Whalen over at his Substack site from North Idaho Exposed, it has exposed their agenda. We're going to be talking about that. But first, in segment two, I will be talking about the threat of Hamas and this asinine delusion that we have going on in the world, and put this in proper perspective. You know, there's a reason, and there's this argument about, oh, well, Palestinians are peaceful people, it's just Hamas that's bad. I remember seeing the streets packed, I mean packed, with men, women, and children. Thousands and thousands of people in the streets chanting Allahu Akbar as they were parading dead, naked, abused bodies of men and women that they had just captured on October 7th. These people, nobody was mourning. And I haven't seen any Palestinians speaking out against the attack. In fact, recent polls are showing as many as 75% of Palestinians are saying that the attack was justified on October 7th. So we're going to put that into perspective, and I have a couple of sound bites, a couple of audio clips, rather. One is recent, and it's some guy, I don't know who he is, somebody sent it to me with this whole string of evidence, proof that, you know, Hamas and Palestinians aren't just the peaceful people that people are making them out to be, and it's only Hamas. Well, and then I went through and I doubled, I researched all of his claims, because he doesn't give sources, so anybody can say anything they want. And plus, it's a TikTok video, and why anybody who calls themselves a patriot, a conservative patriot, in America would use a Chinese communist military intelligence tool to reach out to the world is beyond me. It's absolutely stupid. But anyway, this guy posted all this historical information about Hamas, and I went through and checked it and verified everything's true. So I'm going to go ahead and play the audio from that so you can hear that rundown. Really important, I think. So, well, let's get into the news and commentary. The news and commentary brought to you by the podcast Prepping 2.0, helping to take your preps to the next level. And that's the website, prepping2-0.com. So first, Ultra MAGA Patriots, from the New American, Hungary, the European Redoubt, is going to introduce a sovereignty law to regulate foreign influence. Hungary's ruling Fidesz party is set to unveil a bill to the nation's parliament that will set up a special office to keep track of activities that threaten the sovereignty of the country. This new department would supervise the inflow of foreign funding to political parties, media, and public organizations believed to be singled out for manipulation by adversaries or financial interests such as Hungarian-American leftist billionaire George Soros. Ding, ding, ding. Yep. Oh, by the way, he's not in Hungary or America right now. He's hiding in China. Communist Chinese are protecting him, giving him cover. But it's precisely that we need in the United States to root out any type of financial sources or any type of external influence designed to subvert American culture, the American identity, who we are, our language, our culture, our borders, all of that. And of course, I would say start with the academia and the media simultaneously. But anyway, we also, speaking of Chinese, we have our own issues here. From Fox News, just coming out, and Carrie Lake posted this, and that's how I got keyed into this story. I'm not real keen on helping to promote Fox News stories lately, the way that they've turned coat. But thousands of Chinese nationals and gotaways at the southern border since October 1. In the last 6 weeks, Customs and Border Protection sources, told Fox News that since October 1, there were over 6,500 Chinese nationals encountered at the U.S.-Mexico border, along with 700 Afghans. There were over 140 encounters from Syria, over 80 from Iran, and over 1,500 from Uzbekistan. Meanwhile, for the month of October, there were on average just over 1,000 gotaways a day, meaning migrants who evaded Border Patrol apprehension but who were caught on alternative forms of detection. So, according to Alejandro Mayorkas, the DHS secretary told lawmakers, now, if he's admitting this, then, well, he doesn't want to answer any questions whatsoever when questioned about how vulnerable and open our borders are. He told lawmakers earlier this month that there had been approximately 600,000 gotaways in fiscal year 23. So if he's admitting to 600,000, when this guy's saying that there's no crisis at the border, how many do you think actually got away? Well, anyway, in other news, Biden is invoking wartime powers to fund electric heaters as he cracks down on gas appliances. Seriously. Biden invoked a Cold War era law in a surprising move Friday to pour taxpayer funds into domestic manufacturing of electric heat pumps, an alternative to gas-powered residential furnaces. In a joint announcement with the White House, the Department of Energy said the federal government would award a historic $169 million for 9 projects across 15 sites nationwide in an effort to accelerate electric heat pump manufacturing. Man, I wonder how many people in our government purchased stock in these heat pump companies prior to this announcement. I'd be really curious to know. The significant level of funding was made possible after Biden utilized the 1950 Defense Production Act to increase domestic production of green energy technologies. Somebody get this guy removed? Anyway, from Discern Report, this is really interesting. Elon Musk has announced a new policy, such as phrases from the former Twitter, now called X, social media platform, phrases such as decolonization and from the river to the sea could result in getting banned on X. He announced the new change in policy to X on Friday. His announcement established that the use of the terms such as decolonization and from the river to the sea phrases, commonly thrown around by the pro-Palestinian movement, would invite suspension on the platform as they imply genocide. And he's dead on. It's exactly what it means. This is what Hamas says. From the river to the sea means from the Jordan River to the sea, no Israelis, no Israel. It's genocide. They all have to, and they chant this regularly. all the Jews have to die. Israel needs to go away. And they're calling for intifada. They're saying we need to decolonize. That means kill all the Jews and annihilate Israel. And from the river to the sea means the same thing. Well, and on that line, from the blaze, Arizona State University has apparently decided to cancel its event with U.S. Representative Rashida Tlaib. Hideous woman. Someone who has called for the complete annihilation of Israel. Tlaib has come under fire from colleagues in the U.S. House of Representatives for suggesting that Hamas was right to launch the attack on October 7th, and that the complete destruction of the Jewish state is a good thing. Oh yeah, she's the one that's always saying from the river to the sea, and the region needs to be decolonized. That means the death of Israel and Israelis. And as you guys know, these tapes, the January 6th tapes, have been released. I have not had time to go through and sit there and watch any of them, but I've seen a lot of social media folks releasing different portions of it. Several members of Congress have seen a significant number of these tapes, and they're starting to ask the right questions now. Mike Lee is calling for an investigation of the January 6th committee. And by the way, remember the January 6th committee asked for all of the video and other evidence to be suppressed for 50 years because it was so sensitive? There's a reason why. And hopefully these people will be held to account. I'm not going to hold my breath, but 40,000 hours of video from the January 6th Capitol incident have been released. And there's tons of video of police walking around, just like we've seen portions of before, but now it's just a ton of it. Walking around with the police, no violence. They're walking out like they just walked out of a theater once they said, oh, all right, guys, we need to clear out. And everybody says, okay. And they start milling out the door. And it's also going to, I believe, it's going to expose different agencies' involvement as with agents provocateur, instigators. And these tapes, the left, the anti-Trump, anti-American crowd does not want the public to see, but now they're out there. More are coming all the time. So we'll be tracking that. From the Daily Wire, the Democrat Party of Oregon canceled its budgetary meeting and holiday party for this weekend over a reportedly credible threat of pro-Palestinian protesters. So this comes from the, boy, look at the monster you created portion of the news, where now these leftist BLM Antifa darlings of the Democrat Party, really the knuckle-dragging street thugs, the brown shirts of the Communist Socialist Democrat Party, is now having to cancel its meetings because, well, they're not pro-Palestinian enough. They're not aggressively speaking out or advocating on behalf of the Palestinians. So now, just like we saw in New York City, they stormed the Democrat Party headquarters, overran the security and the police, and they're getting more and more hostile, more violent. So yeah, Oregon, of all places, they couldn't think of anybody who is better deserving of being overran by the monsters that they created. So, well, just like we saw the black shirts in Italy, the brown shirts in socialist Germany, they're fodder. At some point, they're going to snuff them. They're going to say, okay, you've outlived your usefulness. You created the chaos that we need. And now you're becoming problematic, so we're going to grind you up and discard you. But they don't get that. You can't even, doesn't register with them. There's some good news out of North Carolina. A school district begins implementing the Parents' Bill of Rights. The Guilford County schools in North Carolina have begun to implement policies in accordance with the state's new Parents' Bill of Rights, which passed in August. Among other things, Guilford County schools have begun clarifying language around parent communication related to behavior, attendance, crime, and instructional material. Exactly. Oh, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, this was Senate Bill 49. It passed both chambers of the North Carolina General Assembly, but it was vetoed by the Democrat North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper. Now, fortunately, they were able to override his veto, and the Parents' Bill of Rights became law. So, this is a governor that doesn't think that the parents have a right over the type of curriculum. No matter how perverted it is, you don't have a right as a parent to have any say or even knowledge about what your children are being exposed to. But anyway, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Hamas, the Palestinians, how they're essentially one and the same. If they're not active militants, then they're supporters, either actively or passively. But we've got some great audio clips that I want to play for you too that hopefully put all of this into perspective. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. Stick around, Patriots.
Millions of Americans sincerely love Donald Trump. They love him in spite of everything they've heard. They love him often in spite of himself. They love Donald Trump because no one else loves them. The country they built, the country their ancestors fought for over hundreds of years, has left them to die in their unfashionable little towns, mocked and despised by the sneering half-wits with finance degrees but no actual skills who seem to run everything all of a sudden. Whatever Donald Trump's faults, he is better than the rest of the people in charge. At least he doesn't hate them for their weakness. Donald Trump, in other words, is and has always been a living indictment of the people who run this country. That was true 4 years ago when Trump came out of nowhere to win the presidency, and it's every bit as true right now. Trump rose because they failed. It's as simple as that. If the people in charge had done a halfway decent job with the country they inherited, if they'd cared about anything other than themselves, even for just a moment, Donald Trump would still be hosting Celebrity Apprentice. But they didn't. Instead, they were incompetent and narcissistic and cruel and relentlessly dishonest. They wrecked what they didn't build. They lied about it. They hurt anyone who told the truth about what they were doing. That's true. We watched. America is still a great country, the best in the world, but our ruling class is disgusting. A vote for Trump is a vote against them. That's what's going on in this country.
Welcome back to episode 23-36, segment 2 here at Radio Free Redoubt. We are broadcasting from the heart of the American Redoubt. Now, let's talk about Palestinians, let's talk about Hamas, and the reason why the surrounding Arab nations do not want the Palestinians in their land, why they're not taking refugees. There's a reason for it. But first, this is interesting. The Floridian Press came out with this just here in the last couple of days. While the United States is officially supporting Israel, the U.S. Department of State is now referring to the Hamas terror group as simply a Palestinian armed group based in the Gaza Strip, not a terrorist organization. The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, which is an independent federal agency that appears to work under the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has posted on its official Instagram page that while Hamas attacked Israel, it was done so by a, quote, Palestinian armed group based in Gaza, and appears to be blaming Israel for conducting attacks on healthcare facilities and workers. Well, we're seeing tons of footage now where Hamas is operating out of these hospitals. And in fact, hospital staff are actually working with, in concert with Hamas. But anyway, according to the U.S. Department of State, the Hamas terror was officially designated and recognized as a terrorist organization on October 8th, 1997. And USAID is the agency that leads the U.S. government's international development and disaster assistance. Several thousand USAID workers signed a letter calling for a ceasefire to the Israeli bombings and ground incursion into Gaza. Progressive members of Congress have also been calling for a ceasefire, as have violent anti-Israel groups. Well, thank God Israel is not being swayed by all of these calls for a ceasefire. All that means is a regrouping, a rearming, resupply, and reorganization of Hamas for continued hostilities. If you want to drag this out and get more people hurt, killed, then give them a ceasefire. Well, fortunately, they're not. And here's kind of a, here's an issue. They're right up against the Egyptian border, and Egypt says they will sacrifice as many lives as it takes to prevent the Palestinians from coming into Egypt. Wow, how's that for some love for your fellow Arabs? Well, there's a reason why they don't want this brotherly love coming across the border into their country, because everywhere they go, they create problems. So this audio was sent to me. Let you take a listen to it. This guy's given a historical rundown of all the problems that Palestinians have brought to the nations where they had Palestinians before they were kicked out. Listen to this.
The Palestinians are peaceful, and that it's not them, it's actually Hamas that's causing all these problems. But that's not the case. Every country that has ever had a large amount of Palestinians has regretted it. And that's the reason that none of these Arab countries are willing to accept Palestinian refugees. Don't believe me? Let's go through it. So back in the late 80s, the nation of Kuwait was a haven for Palestinian refugees. However, they were all expelled in 1991. Now, what could have caused an Arab nation like Kuwait to expel 300,000 Palestinians, representing nearly 20% of the entire population of Kuwait? Well, that was because a year prior, elected leaders of the Palestinians in Kuwait actually supported Saddam Hussein's invasion. After Kuwait, with the U.S.'s help, successfully defended themselves from Iraq, they found that those Palestinian organizations had actually been aiding Saddam Hussein, trying to destabilize and destroy the government of Kuwait. They kicked them the f*** out. This certainly wasn't the first time this happened. A couple decades earlier, there was a lot of Palestinian organizations throughout Jordan. Those organizations openly called and protested for the removal of Jordan's king, as well as the destruction of the entire Jordanian monarchy. See, at that time, the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, actually had its own armies operating within Jordan. And they used those armies to try to destabilize the entire country, all in an effort to punish Jordan for not being able to defeat the Israelis. These armies even went into the capital city of Amman, where they attacked, robbed, and even kidnapped Jordanian citizens, all in the name of collecting financial assistance for their war against Israel. When the Jordanian police tried to stop this from happening, PLO armies massacred them. They even had an organization called the PFLP, which stood for the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. This organization hijacked Jordanian planes, diverting the planes to Palestinian-held airfields in Jordan and holding the Jordanian passengers hostage. So in response, in 1970, the Jordanian army actually had to declare war on the PLO. After 10 long months of grueling warfare, Jordanians were finally able to drive the Palestinians out of their country. But before they left, a Palestinian terrorist group known as Black September assassinated the Jordanian prime minister. After being expelled from Jordan, the Palestinians then went to Lebanon. At the time, Lebanon had a conservative Christian Maronite government. The Palestinians, even though they were only guests in that country, they weren't happy about that. So they allied themselves with socialist and Marxist organizations all throughout the country in an effort to overthrow the Christian Lebanese government. Once they started their coup, thousands upon thousands of Palestinian militants flooded into the country, sending the entire nation of Lebanon into civil war. Civil war that ended up being one of the most bloody and chaotic wars in Middle Eastern history. You may not know this if you've never been to Lebanon, but they still haven't recovered from that. So if you're wondering why these Arab nations won't accept Palestinian refugees, it's because they know better. Because unlike bleeding heart liberals in America, the Arabs of the Middle East know their history.
Now you can go back and re-listen to that if you want, as many times as you want. Go look up Black September. This whole history, look up every one of the things that he mentioned. I went back through and I pulled up the historical accounts and documentation and press articles and everything else covering this. He's correct on every one of these things that he pulled up. And I didn't even know about half of these. So there's a really good reason. These people are, you know what? Go Israel. These people are a plague on every culture that they're, including the Arab culture. I'm not saying genocide against the people, but what I'm saying is take out Hamas, take out the ability of the Palestinians to wage warfare. Don't stop until you've achieved that. And then the remaining people, you can help them rebuild just like you've done before. But there's not going to be any peace as long as Hezbollah and Hamas are alive. Now, he mentioned Lebanon quite a bit. You know, that was a Christian, it had a Christian government, huge, huge Christian population in Lebanon until it was overran by Palestinian influenced. And also Iran's had a lot of influence there. Now, Hezbollah is there. There's still some Christian militias, but they're not anywhere as active as they were during this civil war that he's talking about back in the 1970s. So Bridget Gabriel, she is a Christian from Lebanon, and she was part of this panel with the, now remember, this is in 2017, if I'm not mistaken, but it is very relevant, just as relevant today. And she's talking about the Islamic threat. She's Bridget Gabriel is very well known and a very popular speaker on the threat of Islam. So there was this Heritage Foundation panel, and they were discussing Benghazi and how our government betrayed our American personnel that were in Libya that resulted in at least 4 deaths, including our ambassador. So they were discussing this. They hadn't even mentioned Islam at all, but there was one lone Islamic young woman there during the question and answer portion, and she brings up the issue of Islam. And Bridget Gabriel flat puts this girl in her place with facts. And somebody from a firsthand perspective of dealing with the Islamic threat. So listen to this exchange. Beautiful. And I love the guy's comment at the very end. His final question for this young Arab or Islamic gal who was there.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace to you all. My name is Saba Ahmed. I'm a law student at American University. I am here to ask you a simple question. I know that we portray Islam and all Muslims as bad, but there is 1.8 billion Muslim followers of Islam. We have 8 million plus Muslim Americans in this country, and I don't see them represented here. But my question is, how can we fight an ideological war with weapons? How can we ever end this war? The jihadist ideology that you talk about, it's an ideology. How can you ever win this thing if you don't address it ideologically?
Great question. I am so glad you're here, and I am so glad you brought that up because it gives us an opportunity to answer. What I find so amazing is since the beginning of this panel, which we are here about Benghazi attack against our people, not one person mentioned Muslims, We are here against Islam, or we're launching war against Muslims. We are here to discuss how four Americans died and what our government is doing. We were not here to bash Muslims. You were the one who brought up the issue about most Muslims, not us. And since you brought it up, allow me to elaborate with my answer. There are 1.2 billion Muslims in the world today. Of course, not all of them are radicals. The majority of them are peaceful people. The radicals are estimated to be between 15 to 25%, according to all intelligence services around the world. That leaves 75% of them peaceful people. But when you look at 15 to 25% of the world Muslim population, you're looking at 180 million to 300 million people dedicated to the destruction of Western civilization. That is as big of the United States. So why should we worry about the radicals, 15 to 25%? Because it is the radicals that kill. Because it is the radicals that behead and massacre. When you look throughout history, when you look at all the lessons of history, most Germans were peaceful, yet the Nazis drove the agenda. And as a result, 60 million people died, almost 14 million in concentration camps, 6 million were Jews. The peaceful majority were irrelevant. When you look at Russia, most Russians were peaceful as well. Yet the Russians were able to kill 20 million people. The peaceful majority were irrelevant. When you look at China, for example, most Chinese were peaceful as well. Yet the Chinese were able to kill 70 million people. The peaceful majority were irrelevant. When you look at Japan prior to World War II, most Japanese were peaceful as well. Yet Japan was able to butcher its way across Southeast Asia, killing 12 million people, mostly killed with bayonets and shovels. The peaceful majority were irrelevant. On September 11th in the United States, we had 2.3 million Arab Muslims living in the United States. It took 19 hijackers, 19 radicals to bring America down to its knees, destroy the World Trade Center, attack the Pentagon, and kill almost 3,000 Americans that day. The peaceful majority were irrelevant. So for all our powers of reasons and us talking about moderate and peaceful Muslims, I'm glad you're here. But where are the others speaking out? And since you are the only Muslim representative... Only Muslim representative in here, you took the limelight instead of speaking about why our government, and I assume, are you an American? You're an American citizen. So as an American citizen, you sat in this room, and instead of standing up and saying a question or asking something about our four Americans that died and what our government is doing to correct the problem, you stood there to make a point about peaceful, moderate Muslims. I wish you brought 10 with you to question about how we can hold our government responsible. It is time we take political correctness and throw it in the garbage where it belongs and stop calling it fair.
And there will be refreshments afterward. Did you want to respond to the... You had a follow-up that you'd... Go ahead.
Comment. Thank you for your responses. And I do really hope that other Muslims will start showing up at these conservative forums. But, you know, as a peaceful American Muslim, I would like to think that I'm not that irrelevant. I'm just as much an American, and I'm very deeply saddened about the lives that were lost in Libya, and I hope that we will find justice for their families. But I don't think that this war can ever be won by just the military. You have to bring Muslims to the table to address this.
I think everyone agrees that it can't be won just militarily, and I think that everyone has said that. Tell me who the head of the Muslim peace movement is?
I guess it's me right now, so thank you.
Now that is just golden right there. It puts everything in its proper place. And they always get up and say, you know, there are so many Muslims. Not all of us are, you know, violent Islamists. But where are the voices? Where are the Muslims in America that are decrying the attacks against Israel on October 7th? Where are those that are saying this was, you know, I'm a Muslim too, but this was completely out of line? That doesn't represent Islam. What they're trying to say is, well, most of us are peaceful, but they won't denounce it or even call Hamas a terrorist organization. It's like the BBC can't even bring themselves to call Hamas a terrorist organization. But there's just silence coming out of the Muslim community who are saying, not all of us are violent. Not everybody's violent. But we sure saw the streets packed with men, women, and children dancing in the streets when they were parading dead, naked Jewish bodies through the streets in Gaza. I didn't see one person mourning or shaking their head or standing in disapproval. This is a real problem. Anyway, stand your ground. Stand your ground. All right, we'll come back with segment three. We're going to talk about this United Against Conservatives. They are bringing it to the American Redoubt. They are bringing it to red areas, conservative areas, and they are bringing all weapons to bear, social weapons, media, information. It's on. They are specifically targeting for pouring all of their resources into these conservative areas. Casey Whalen did a great job of exposing this. We're going to talk about that. United Against Conservatives when we come back. Stay right there.
Are you prepared to defend yourself in the dark? A weapon light helps you identify and even deter threats in low light. But it can be difficult to find a secure and comfortable holster. At Works, we design and build holsters for Glock and Sig Sauer pistols with lights. Our precision fit holsters will help you carry with confidence so you're ready to defend yourself day and night. Go to worksholsters.com. Find your gun and light in our holster finder. Select your preferred carry style and order your holster today.
Are you prepared for an economic, socio-political collapse in America? Do you wonder how something like that could be possible? What would that even look like? I recommend Glenn Tate's 10-book series titled 299 Days. From a lawyer and government insider's perspective, he lays out a plausible scenario that could very well come about if we continue on the path we're on as a country. Through his fictional character, he lays out his own real-life journey to prepare himself and his family for the possibility of a future full of difficult challenges and what seem like impossible choices. 299 Days is a high-action dystopian novel written from the perspective of the average Joe American and outlines realistic plans and action steps that you could implement to prepare yourself and those around you for the difficult possibilities ahead. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
Welcome back, Patriots, to segment three of Radio Free Redoubt. And segment three here, we're going to talk about this posting and the great work, the investigative journalism that Casey Whalen did on his North Idaho Exposed channel. And he's got this posted over here at his Substack. That's Casey, C-A-S-E-Y, W-H, A-L-E-N, CaseyWhalen.substack.com. And you'll find this, United Against Conservatives. He's got a series of videos posted over there as well. But let's take a look at this right now. So human rights networks in North Idaho collaborate with feds to target Christians and nationalists. He's been working on this for quite a while. He's been kind of leaking some of it out, and I've read some of it, but he's putting most of it together now. So listen to this. And I mentioned this when this happened last year, but last year in 2022, Attorney General Merrick Garland, launched a national campaign, United Against Hate. All 94 U.S. District Attorney's offices nationwide were to participate in this ploy to combat hate. Well, of course, we all know what they mean by that. That's all code words for, you know, anti-American, anti-patriot, you know, accept the perversion of your children. Don't resist. If you speak out against it, well, they're going to be working with tribal entities, with the FBI, the Department of Justice. Josh Hurwit, U.S. District Attorney for Idaho, hosted events throughout the state in 2022 and 2023 with local human rights organizations that promote social inclusion. As reported here, the gist of the program is to inform the public about the process for reporting hate incidents involving a bias against race, religion, gender, etc. It's the etc. that we're concerned about. To the Department of Justice and Federal Bureau of Investigation, which are logged, in the case of an actual crime, these hate incidents can be retroactively added as charges. So having a hateful feeling or a hateful thought or a hateful saying isn't a crime. But if later on down the road, they can twist and manipulate this into a crime, they can bring all of these other non-crimes into the case. So during two of the events that Casey attended, the DOJ and the FBI stated hate is not illegal, but encourage the public to report hate. This is highly anti-American and dangerous to the state of the nation. Two of the presenters at the event were Tracy Whelan, DOJ, and Brian Gunnarsson, FBI. Gunnarsson is most likely a Human Rights Consortium steering committee member, as public records revealed. Part of the Human Rights Education Institute, which was created by the Kootenai County Task Force on Human Relations, which also hosted a United Against Hate event in 2022. And he's got public records. It's all right here in this article. When asked about the relationship between the FBI and the local Human Rights Education Institute in Coeur d'Alene, the public information officer for the FBI out of Salt Lake City replied that they could not comment on this matter. Well, audio conversation from November 2022 with Agent Gunnarsson exposing the fallacy of the white nationalism narrative. And of course, he even admitted this in this audio file. Another essential aspect of this alliance with the federal government and human rights networks is that these organizations proactively ask the public to report hate on their websites. Even though hate's not a crime, right? Hate is an emotion. But anyway, from prior research and reporting, we know these forms are sent to other human rights networks, such as the Montana Human Rights Network, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Anti-Defamation League, the Institute for Research Education on Human Rights, Western States Center, Institute for Constitutional Advocacy and Protection of Georgetown Law, and more. All have research arms to create dossiers and reports on American citizens to label lynch and provide propaganda to law enforcement and lamestream media. A perfect circle to control all the aspects of the panopticon. It has since been revealed the FBI was targeting traditional Catholics at a national level. Locally, it was uncovered the very same human rights networks participating in the United Against Hate events proactively reported a Catholic rosary walk to the FBI with help from the Idaho State Police. Boy, and here's the flyer for that. I remember the rosary walk that the Catholics did. The latest United Against Hate event was held in Sandpoint, Idaho, November 14th. The flyer for the event alone should give pause to any American paying attention. And, of course, they've got the tribal human rights shield, the tribal shield, the FBI, the DOJ, Department of Justice, and what's the other one? Department of – oh, they got two. They got two seals for the Department of Justice. Okay. During the panel, Elise Hollenbeck of the Boundary County Task Force on Human Relations made comments about Christians, white nationalists, and the John Birch Society. See, these are the categories they consider threats. Christians, there's nothing wrong or illegal about being a Christian. In fact, our nation was founded by mostly Christians. There's nothing wrong with being white. There's nothing wrong with being a nationalist. And there's nothing wrong with being in the John Birch Society. There's nothing wrong with the John Birch Society. They've been a long-standing patriotic organization as a watchdog against communism and against anything anti-American, which obviously makes them out to be a threat to those that are working to subvert Americanism. Another interesting incident occurred after after a DOJ employee, Knight Soar, asked if anyone in the audience had a question. Adrian Norris of the Boundary County Watchman had prepared to ask why the DOJ and the FBI are working with human rights task forces that openly target Christians and nationalists, referencing a letter written by Boundary County Human Rights Task Force member Timothy Bratz, referring to nationalists and Christians as Taliban. You can read this full report by the Boundary County Watchman. Just type that in, Boundary County Watchman, regarding human rights task forces in North Idaho. So he's going to be bringing more exposure to this. A lot of good people, patriots, that want to preserve American traditional values and ideals in the American Redoubt against these people. They're working hard, and so they're doing a good job of exposing this. But if you're not engaged in your community on this stuff, you need to get that way, because they are really doubling down their efforts. And you saw right out of their own words what they're painting as a threat and telling people, you need to report hate. Of course, hate is this broad spectrum enemy of theirs. But Christians, whites, nationalists, that means patriots, that means America first, right, are a threat. And anything they say that makes you feel icky, well, you better report it. Even if it's not a crime, we'll get it in the database. We'll share it with our databases. We'll aggregate this with, you know, all of our this fusion effort, so that the media, when they want to write a hit piece on a Christian patriot in your community, well, they've got this dossier already, things they've said. Now, these are the same kind of people that, and he's got the video of this, a CNN video, where CNN went and did this documentary expose in Boundary County, where the citizens stood up against the library board. And the library board is pretty much, the director resigned over extremism. Well, the extremism was the outraged parents when over these books, these homosexual, transgender, essentially pornography books, to prevent them from going into the library. Of course, the left-wing media was really helpful by saying, oh, these people that are overreacting about these books that aren't even in this library. But they're not telling the whole story. And I talked about this last, I think, this spring or last fall. What these people are doing is saying the radical extremists in Boundary County are threatening and or intimidating the library staff over books that don't even exist, which, you know, the whole point there is to make you look like you're an overreactionary whack job that's freaking out over books that aren't even in their library. But the you get to the bottom of it, and this is what I was looking for before this show, because I covered it and I had all the documentation. And this is what people were upset about. The library joined the American Library Association, which is read by, which is led by a lesbian. And when you look at the membership to become a library member of the American Library Association, the membership agreement states that you will place this book, this or these series of books, books we recommend, you must place those in your library. What they're saying is, well, we, you know, if somebody asks for a book, well, we order it in. But they're not telling the whole story. American Library Association recommended books. You are agreeing when you become a member of the American Library Association that you will carry these books that are recommended by the American Library Association. If you just do an internet search for American Library Association, LGBTQ, you'll see all of the stuff on their website, these little toolkits to help you get these books into your libraries. But when you become a member library of the American Library Association, according to this documentation that I went over last spring or last fall, that's part of the agreement that you will carry these books. So the parents doing the right thing are heading this off at the pass. They're getting ahead of the curve, which is actually refreshing because most of the time we're caught off guard and then we're reactionary, trying to play catch up to get them to remove books from the library. Well, these proactive parents got ahead of the curve and they said, we're not going to accept you putting these books on the shelves. And then here comes, gasp, here comes the left-wing media, including the local newspaper. Oh, these people are just completely overreacting. These books aren't even in this library. Look what idiots. They're protesting books that don't even exist in that library. Darn right. Because they don't exist in that library yet, but they caught on to it. Good on them. Good on you. Patriots, you did the right thing. Let them snivel. Let them resign. Let them feel intimidated, whatever. You try to sexualize our children and pervert our children. The reactions, in my opinion, of the parents should intimidate. You should be intimidated by the outrage that you've caused. We'll be right back. Segment 4, Lady Liberty will be joining me in the studio. Sit tight.
At the end of the day, either the communists win, destroy America, or we destroy the communists, because that's what they are.
This is Chris Walsh of Revolutionary Realty in North Idaho. We've developed springs, installed solar and wind power, installed root cellars, solar hot water heaters, all documented on our website, free for public use. Our articles are fully documented, full-page photos and drawings detailing each endeavor. Take a look at our off-grid information on our website, www.revrealty.us. Again, that's www.revrealty.us. When you're looking for property in North Idaho, call a revolutionary, 208-667-1776.
Welcome back to the fourth and final segment. This is Radio Free Redoubt, broadcasting from the Free Zones. And I've got codename segment 4, Lady Liberty, in the studio. Good evening, Lady Liberty.
Well, good evening to you and good evening, everyone out there. Boy, you've got quite the lineup.
Yes.
Well, as does the whole world, actually, since we're all facing this same stuff. And, well, there's something else interesting that, you know, we've got all of the major headlines going on because,
yes,
because it's basically just one atrocity right after another, and it has been just a downpour for the past 2.5 years since the communist coup took place in the 2020 election.
That's right.
And, you know, now it seems to be common knowledge around the rest of the world that, yeah, this is just what is happening across all these other nations as well. The same exact procedure.
Yes.
And yet they're still trying to deny it in the United States. They're still trying to deny the fact that we still have all of the working operation tools in place. All of the electronic voting machines are still here. And,
you know, even our, you know, heroes in Congress, the hard-hitting patriots that really bring it, not one of them is talking about the electronic voting machines.
None of them are.
It is the cornerstone to this coup. You cannot fix the rest of it unless you deal with that first. It has to be the utmost importance of all the issues, because all of the issues that they're trying to address and all the people that they're you know, having come into Congress to grill them on the border or Department of Justice or whatever it is, are a result of a coup that should not have taken place and wouldn't have taken place if it were not for the electronic voting machines and other voting fraud, you know, ballot harvesting and everything else. We don't get that under control, we'll never be able to get this country back.
Right. And it's not even a matter of just, you know, maybe changing a few different policies in each state. No, it's not that. We need an outright ban of the electronic voting machines.
Yeah.
Anybody that does not say an outright ban has to happen is part of the problem.
Right.
And so we need to make sure that we're very clear about that, that you either are for voting rights or you're for sham elections.
Exactly.
You know, and what's the point of a sham election? I mean, that's kind of like believing in Santa Claus. You know, it's okay.
Right.
We'll just have Santa Claus run again because we all love Santa Claus, and well, he never shows up, you know, because it's just, well, we want him to, but
yes,
he will just, you know, he's never going to show up. Well, because yeah, Santa Claus doesn't even exist, but they're going to keep running him anyway, and people are going to keep getting excited about it and thinking if we vote for Santa Claus, he'll be elected.
Maybe he'll show up.
Yeah, he'll show up. He'll be elected. It's the same thing. It would be like if you walked up to a board and I put a checkbox on a chalkboard, and I gave you the piece of chalk. I said, go up there and you know, fill in that box. And you went up there and checked the box, and you walked away, and I walked right up behind you and just took the eraser and erased it. And I went, thank you very much for doing that.
Yeah, thank you for your vote.
Thank you for your participation.
Right.
That's the same thing that is happening with all of this stuff. And it's been proven. Everybody knows it's true. The same thing is happening in blueprint cases all around the world because of these electronic voting machines.
Right.
And China is the primary owner of Dominion. I mean, this is a no-brainer. And so I'm just stunned.
Well, it's just like the Carter Institute. You've got the same creeps that are funding that. China, Bill Gates, you know, and others that are part of the problem.
That oversaw the whole Arizona election was the Carter Institute.
Right.
And so that's exactly where the entire world needs to start saying, ban electronic voting machines and our world will go back to normal.
Yeah.
Because as it is right now, we're 23 years into fraudulent elections where we've been told that we've been voting, and yet they still just wipe out all our votes. They add however many votes out of thin air to the other guy that just so happens to be a communist-supporting candidate, right? And so what a coincidence. All the communist-supporting candidates got into office all across America in the past 20 years. What a shocker. And now we're so out of control that you can't even – no free speech. I mean, this country doesn't look anything like it used to.
Oh, no.
I mean, there are no constitutional rights anymore, because why? If you say anything about constitutional rights, you'll be
you're an extremist.
You're going to be an extremist. You're going to be checked out by the FBI and prosecuted for something that doesn't even exist in the law books.
Right.
You know, I mean, like they're trying to
making up as they go.
Right, exactly. Like with Trump trying to say that the fact that he questioned election integrity means that he's guilty of RICO charges.
Right.
What,
yes.
What is the, wow, there's a disconnect, a huge disconnect. And whether it matters or not, they're still able to run him around the pole so long and cause him so much trouble and harass him so much and cost, you know, however many, who knows how much he has had to spend on attorneys.
Oh, millions.
The average American couldn't even imagine coming up with the attorney fees for even one attorney in one case, right?
Right.
Let alone case after case after case after case after case.
Yep.
Where you need an entire crew of attorneys. And so, I mean, this is exactly illegal. And so what I wanted to talk about this evening in segment four was something very interesting happening that is not hitting the headlines, and it won't, because this is something that addresses another part of the law that is being subverted, right? I mean, like as if the law is not being subverted enough in a communist coup, right? Do we really have to point out more? Well, yes, because something is very interesting happening right now. In the Supreme Court, there are currently four cases that could curb the administrative state. And if, I don't know how many of you are actually familiar with the fact that there is absolutely nothing in the Constitution that allows for administrative law.
Right.
Absolutely nothing.
We're really seeing that with the ATF, coming up with the ATF rules. These are not laws passed by Congress, by the legislature. They're just, they're interpreting rules. They're expanding on their own. Well, they're establishing law illegally.
Exactly. Well, and so I have this Epic Times article here that's very, very fascinating, because while you and I were, we were on the Constitution drafting team for the establishment of Liberty State.
Yes.
And so because of my background in defending people's property rights and water rights, I had quite a bit of experience using constitutional law to back off state officials.
Yes.
And so I'm quite familiar with the fact that administrative law flies in the face of constitutional rights in a huge way.
Yes.
In one case, what they wanted to do with a certain small river in our area would have violated 14 of our constitutional rights.
Wow.
And so I took out an ad, a half of a newspaper page ad. We paid for it, and I listed all 14 of those constitutional rights that would be violated should the state actually do that. And that if they do that, we will hold them accountable in a court of law for all of those violations and remove the attorney general who is in charge of that. And they backed off. And so
that's pretty cool.
So what's interesting here is that's because we were aware of our constitutional rights.
That's right.
And what happens is administrative law, which was more or less invented by a law professor. And in fact, I knew a lady that was his personal secretary, and his name is Richard Pierce. And he is a George Washington University law professor who has written more than 20 books on administrative law. And so this guy is more or less, if he is not the inventor of admin law in the United States, he's the one that has brought it into action, and it is perfectly matching with the UN global agenda.
Yes.
And so I almost have to doubt if he's the one that invented it, considering the fact that it is complementary to the United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda 2130, right? Exactly. And so did they just
Did he inspire them, or
did they just inspire him to write it and take credit for it? Because what he has established through administrative law is what has allowed sustainable development to reach down to the local levels,
yes,
and affect all of the local people in effects of private property, water rights, mineral rights, all of these things.
Right.
And what it's able to do is it sidesteps elected officials by going through unelected officials, using federal bureaucrats as well as bureaucrats in agencies. And,
yes,
and so what happens is legislators, both legislators and courts, become lazy. And so they have, in the past several decades now, since this admin law has been set up and started to flourish, the courts and the legislatures use admin law to take care of all the stuff that they don't want to address.
Right.
So basically they defer their job to these agencies.
Yes.
Well, and then what happens in these agencies is they write policy recommendations. They write rules and codes. And what they do through these writing of rules and codes that virtually goes unnoticed by legislators.
Yes.
Because I saw this when I worked in Olympia. The legislators don't even have time to even look at what these agencies are writing.
That's right.
And so they're able to write one revised code after another, just, you know, to the point where it becomes contrary to constitutional law.
Right.
And this is what I saw in defending property rights, where the police, there were quite a few different cases where people were being arrested because agencies would be citing property owners for violating administrative law.
Right.
Well, so then the policemen show up to arrest these people, and the people go, cite the law I'm breaking, cite the law. And
right.
And then the cops are just thrown into total confusion because the property owner is correct.
Right.
And they're citing constitutional law while the administrative law has gone so far down the wrong road that it is now exactly contrary to constitutional law.
Yes.
And so when I talked to these different policemen that have been in this situation, they said, you honestly, you don't even know what to do. And so what everybody has agreed to do at this point is just do what the boss says, because it is not the cop's job when the legislator is too lazy to investigate and see if all of these codes are actually contrary to,
yes,
constitutional law or not. It's the legislators that aren't doing their jobs. It's the courts that aren't doing their jobs.
Right.
And here's why. This article describes that the U.S. Supreme Court has now taken up several cases this term that pose challenges to the administrative state following years of concerted legal and political opposition to its legitimacy. Specifically, the justices are set to reevaluate the decades-old doctrine known as Chevron deference. This involves the case of Chevron versus the Natural Resources Defense Council, which has been cited more than 18,000 times by federal courts and is unquestionably one of the foundational decisions in administrative law, according to the Congressional Research Service. Now, see, because this is interesting. When I say the legislators are too lazy to look into it, they defer to back to the agency because the law, not the law, but this Chevron deference is actually the thing that says, this was done in 1984. It says the 1984 precedent held that courts generally should defer to the agency's interpretations of ambiguous language in congressional statutes.
Oh, yes.
So here you have it. This is the bottom line with how they're getting away with bloody murder, why they're destroying people's lives,
yes,
and going exactly contrary to constitutional law is because they purposely write this ambiguous code or, you know, revised code or, right. or rule to where it's ambiguous language. And so instead of a court having to decide whether that's legal or not, they defer it back to the agency to interpret what that's supposed to mean.
Yes.
And of course, the agency always interprets in their favor.
Exactly.
Always. And this is exactly what we were facing with the property rights group over and over again.
You know, I spoke with some Idaho legislators. They were saying the same thing. They have rules that the legislature has to vote on to approve or vote up or vote down.
Right.
So you've got a stack of rules from every department. There's Department of Health. There's the transportation. There's the Fish and Game. There's all these departments that drop this stack of rules for legislature to vote on to approve. And there's no way. It's not even a matter of laziness. It's like there's not even humanly possible to go through all these regulations to strike out portions that are something that, you know, you would not want to have as a law. You would never pass it as a law.
Right.
And so they just vote to approve the rules, and there they are.
Well, and exactly. So you've got all of these unelected bureaucrats by the bazillions, it seems like. They just come out of the woodwork with suddenly, like you're saying, stacks and stacks of information. We saw this in Olympia as well. And seriously, my legislator was already working overtime 14, 16 hours a day with just the standard things that he was doing.
Yeah, normal business.
Yeah. And to think that somebody is going to expect them to have the time to comb through all of these and make sure that, you know, it's okay or good with the people of their constituents,
right.
you know, that's an impossibility. And so they know that. They know that,
yes.
and they take full advantage of that, because instead of the state allocating money to hire people to actually go through this word by word and investigate if it is indeed lawful
right.
for them to even do that, they just throw it down there and people sign it. They don't read it. It's horribly irresponsible on the side of the courts, on the side of the legislators, on the side of the state. But when you've got corruption in charge,
yes.
they look for these opportunities and they exploit them because they know it's impossible. So flood everybody with this huge book of regulations and stuff that you know they will never look at, but they have to sign on. They either have to disagree or agree.
Right.
If they sign, bang, you know, all the other people signed. And if they didn't, why didn't they? Right. And so this is how it works. And they cause this flood technique to happen where it's virtually impossible for anybody to keep up with, and they won't hire anybody to actually investigate it. Of mm-hmm. course not, because they're the ones that are pushing the corruption.
Right.
And furthermore, not only are they able to do this, but they do it to the point of taking people's property, taking people's livelihood, destroying entire families,
yes.
fining them with outrageous fines that, I mean, these are administrative fines,
yes.
which is illegal. And so this admin law that has no constitutional existence in the first place is able to fine people out of their land or force them into selling everything they own to pay these fines, or just basically destroying them altogether.
Or destroying you financially by all the lawyers that you have to hire to go through the process. And theirs are covered by the state.
Right.
So they can run you into the ground that way, lawfare.
And not only that, but they send them back to, they deny your due process. They deny all of your constitutional
right.
rights. Your Fifth Amendment, your Sixth Amendment, often your ninth, your 13th, your first, it goes on and on. All of these different constitutional rights of the individual.
Yes.
And this is basically, you know, in summary, if I was to describe what this does, is that admin law is the vehicle that the vile communists are using to separate constitutional rights from the individual.
Right.
It is invention of Pierce or Pierce and the United Nations in conjunction with their Agenda 2130. And admin law was maliciously invented as that vehicle to subvert and undermine individuals' constitutional rights. There is absolutely nothing in the Constitution that allows for admin law and agencies to even exist, let alone to steal people's private property, water, mineral rights, etc. Admin law has gotten so far out of control that police involved in this administration regulatory violation of arrests can't actually even figure out which side of the law to follow. I mean, it's that bad, right? Like I was saying. And so if the police are confused, you have to know that it's really gotten out of control. To be that bad. And yet the person, the citizen of that state always loses out because they can't begin to afford to defend themselves,
right,
in the way that a state can afford to attack you.
Yes.
And so so that was, you know, that was part of what you and I were, well, what I was addressing in writing the new constitution for what would have been Liberty State,
right,
was addressing that alone, because that would have to go.
Yeah.
That just, you know, there is a huge castration of all admin law that would have to happen.
That's right.
And so the bottom line is that admin law needs to be, severely cut back and eventually just cast out.
Well, it needs to be gutted right off the bat.
Gutted, exactly. That was the next word I was going to say, was it needs to be gutted, and lawmakers need to address that from the standpoint of either get rid of it abruptly or incrementally, just start cutting it back.
Yep.
Cut it back more and more each year till it's dwindled down to pretty much nothing, because there's no way that, you know, it's, they've seen the products of it where it has become so out of control, it's contrary to law and is harming the people, and the people cannot defend themselves from it. The good part was that we saw Trump go in and wipe out stacks and stacks. I mean, huge stacks, almost libraries worth of regulations.
It was literally stacks.
That was such a saving grace to the American people. I mean, I don't even know if he knows how impactful that was and how positive of an impact that was for America.
Yeah.
And so truly, short of that, you know, that same kind of action needs to happen with administrative law and all of the agencies.
Right.
Talk about cut back on the funding. If we're running short on government funding, the agencies and everybody that's associated with admin law needs to be just absolutely gutted.
Yep.
And so this article from the Epoch Times also describes, another guy opposing Pierce is Dr. Philip Hamburger from Columbia University. He's a law professor there and also the CEO of the New Civil Liberties Alliance.
Oh.
And so he argues emphatically against Pierce, and obviously on the side of the Constitution, mm-hmm, and constitutional rights. And he says that others have argued that overturning Chevron, the whole Chevron deference action that the Supreme Court is addressing right now, which is good because they're looking at it in a favorable way of overturning it, you know, getting rid of it, cutting it back,
right,
and starting to incrementally reduce admin law.
Yeah.
And because they know they've actually avoided it for the past 10 years, apparently, because they know that it's not lawful.
That's right.
And they're afraid to get into it, but now they're finally starting to get into it and attack it the right way. And so it says, others have argued that overturning Chevron would restore stability, given that it allows agencies to promulgate unpredictable regulations based on ambiguous statutory language. The doctrine itself also violates due process by creating systemic bias against individuals and businesses who challenge agencies in court, Mr. Hamburger said.
Outstanding.
And so just the fact that that's going on right now, and they're looking at four different cases, that's going to start cutting and chopping it back. I'm excited.
That is that talking about going for the juggler.
Yep.
Yep, that needs to happen.
That's right.
Awesome.
Yeah, because that seriously is how the United Nations has been able, well, the United Nations is the deep state. This is how they have been able to accomplish so
that's right.
many egregious attacks upon the American freedoms.
Well, good. Well, that's one we definitely want to follow. I'm sure Epoch Times will be. So we'll be bringing updates as we achieve some victories in that area.
That's right. Hopefully.
Awesome. Well, thanks for bringing that. That's,
that's
a lot of people don't know that.
That is important business right there.
Absolutely. People are unaware. So, all right. Well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to do it.
All right, guys. Well, that's a wrap. We'll go ahead and close things out here tonight. Don't forget to stick around. We've got some new old-time radio for you, for our live listeners. And otherwise, join us every weekday morning, 7 a.m. Pacific time. And that's coming out of Spokane on KTW, the Liberty Broadcasting, which is the American Christian Network affiliate. All right, you guys have a blessed week. Have an awesome, blessed, and thankful Thanksgiving. And join us next Sunday night for the weekly podcast right here. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.